Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Broadcasting live from the Hyundai Studios, presented to you by your local Hyundai dealers. This is where Chicago goes to talk Bears. Sports Radio 670 The Score. Chicago's home for Bears fans. WSCR and HD Chicago. WBMX HD2 Chicago. An Odyssey station. The Score!
This hour is brought to you by Vasectomy Clinics of Chicago.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I have your attention?
Sage Rosenfels, the official Tuesday morning quarterback with Dan Bernstein and Leila Rahimi, longtime football observer.
I grew up with a little 19-inch black and white, I don't even know if it was 19 inches, it might have been 12 inches or something, black and white TV that had four channels. We basically watched the black and blue division. My dad's from Chicago. All we basically watched were Vikings, Packers, Bears, Packers.
12 years of NFL experience.
Rosenfels with the ball, the bootleg, fake the pass, dives for the end zone, and in for the touchdown. Sage Rosenfels, brilliant on that first drive.
Goat of the preseason.
It's a specialty.
Sage Rosenfels with Dan Bernstein and Leila Rahimi on 670 The Score.
Nobody breaks down the Bears offense quite as well as this guy. Sage Rosenfels is on Twitter at SageRosenfels18. And he's with us on the Score Hotline, presented by Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book. And you can see him on Twitch at twitch.tv/Chicago670 The Score. Well, let's start right with it, Sage, with Bill Lazor again continuing to put his stamp on this hard-nosed, still conservative offense that looks like it's going to let the plays come to the young quarterback instead of forcing him to make them, at least so far.
It does seem like to me that they do have a plan, and I feel like when Lazor's running the offense, there is more of a plan than when Matt Nagy's running the offense. There are things that personally I aren't really my cup of tea, and maybe calls I would make different. But for the most part, you got to love how they're having success running the ball when the quarterback's under center. You know, start the game, 6-yard run, great way to start. Second play, shotgun. Right, throw incomplete. And to me, that doesn't make sense. You're going to play in the first play of the game. And I understand that coaches have a script, but I'm big on, like, listen, if we run the ball in the first play of the game and we get 6 or more yards, by golly, we're going to run the ball again. I understand that the play sheet in the top 15 that we've talked about said, you know, the second play is this shotgun play. But I'm one on, hey, if the run goes well, let's run it again. If it doesn't go well, now we'll run the shotgun play. That's just one man's opinion. But yet, you know, you saw the more conservative game plan. You do see them using Justin with some play action, with some bootleg. You also see them, of course, just using his straight up legs on sometimes on third downs, where they just run sort of quarterback sweep, which, again, I'm not a huge fan of just the straight quarterback sweep. You can do that out of some sort of wildcat if that's the case. And there were a couple third and shorts that I thought were not very good calls. But for the most part, they had a sort of conservative game plan. They played it tight to the vest, and they relied on their defense, who played extremely well in this game. And they played, you know, a type of football game that it was not pretty. It wasn't full of a ton of big plays and a ton of big yards. But knowing how the game sort of turned out, and you go back and watch it, man, the Bears defense was playing really, really well, harassing a Derek Carr a ton and doing a nice job over there. And so you have to sort of play off the way the other side of the ball is playing as well. And I thought Bill Lazor did a nice job overall calling this football game.
Dan and I talked about just how rattled Carr looked
after really halftime. And what we saw, just no adjustments. Clearly, the Bears defense looked like they had made some adjustments, but also just the accuracy wasn't there. There were also drop passes on the other side offensively. We thought a lot of it was just what we know about the team. Now, after hearing what happened to John Gruden, I think there's a little more to it. But before we get to that, just tell me what you saw out of Derek Carr and his performance, too.
Well, you know, listen, I've known Derek Carr since I think he was 13 years old, something like that. I was backing up his brother David in 2006 in Houston. Derek was, I feel like, either a middle school or like an early high school quarterback at some private school in Houston. And so I remember him being around a little bit. And when he first came out and I saw him throw, and I saw, you know, David was a really good athlete who had a, in my opinion, a bad throwing motion, some bad mechanics, and had other things. But Derek, I saw the same athleticism, but I saw a better throwing motion, a guy who could throw from a really tight pocket, very smart kid. So when that sort of Gruden matchup came about, of like, okay, he's going to have to go with, and because I know guys who played for John Gruden, guys like Brian Griese and Chris Sims, and guys that I've talked to about Gruden's offense and simply how complex and detailed and quarterback driven is. I mean, he's giving you three or four plays, but you know, you can also check to any play based off of certain, you know, cover zero, all out blitz looks and things like that. He relies a lot on a really smart quarterback. And I thought Derek had been playing extremely well and growing in this system over the last couple of years. And a lot of people are like, you know, Derek's not going to be a Gruden guy. I think he ended up being very much a very good quarterback in this system, and he did not play well in this game. He was harassed time and time again by the Bears defensive line. And then you look back and it did seem like things were just off in this ball game. Some drop passes, some missed throws, sort of the whole team didn't play very well. And now we probably know a lot more of what may have been circulating in that building starting on, I'm not sure, maybe Friday, maybe even before that, we don't know. But that was a really poor performance by a John Gruden run offense that, and a Derek Carr led team that we don't generally see. And I think we sort of do know why. Those distractions are huge. They just are. When you play this game and you play it at a really, really high level, and it takes all these pieces to be highly, highly focused at the same time, all going in the same direction. And when you have rumors and or even quotes that have come out of terrible things that the leader of the organization, other than the owner, John Gruden has more pull than Mike Mayock, the general manager, or whoever the president is, or whoever the whatever is, it is the owner and John Gruden. And when the leader says some awful, awful things, there's just no way to completely eliminate that from your mind for all, you know, 46 guys or whoever that dress to play with the focus and concentration that you need. John Gruden lost that game for the LA Raiders or for the Las Vegas Raiders, not Derek Carr or anybody else.
And that takes some of the bloom off the quality of the victory, because here we were looking at, it's a hell of a win. When you go on the road without David Montgomery, without Akeem Hicks, without some core special teamers and some of your blocking tight ends, and you kick another team's ass in their building, that should be a big deal. And it's just too bad. It's too bad that now we have to look at it through a different prism of a team that wasn't all there.
You can choose to do that. When you play in the league, all wins are glossy. All wins are pretty. All wins count as one on the left-hand column and no more addition to any numbers on the right-hand column. So a win is a win. Ugly, beautiful, last second, however it is. I think they probably learned some things about themselves, you know, how they can win ugly, how they can win with the defense and a grinded-out running game and maybe a little more conservative. They saw things that their young quarterback can do. They also saw some weaknesses of that young quarterback, you know, a couple blitzes that occurred that you'd like to get Justin Fields to maybe new mic it, as they would say. You know, a team brings a will and a free safety to the weak side on a blitz. you'd like your quarterback to be able to go, hey, instead of line going to the Mike linebacker, we're going to slide you to the Will linebacker, which puts the running back on the free safety, if that makes sense to you guys. And they didn't do that a couple of times in this game. A veteran quarterback can do those types of things. So to get through an ugly game, a win on the road against, as you said, a really good football team, a good football team that wasn't playing its top game, but a good football team, and to get the quarterback more experience, to show that they can grind it out with this other, you know, two other running backs, not David Montgomery. I thought Herbert was very good in this game. I thought Williams also played well. I think they learned a lot about this team, that they've got a lot of quality and very good players on this team, even when some guys are down. And they've got a young quarterback that does do some things really well and has a lot of things that, of course, he has to learn on. But any win in the National Football League has a glossy feel to it.
I want to ask you about, we saw him take some hits, Fields, and I've been curious about his slide mechanics. He drags his back foot when he kicks the other one out in front, and you see him turn his foot inward a little bit sometimes, and it just makes me fear an ankle or a knee problem there that might come up before. A lot of quarterbacks don't slide that way. And then we also saw when he was tackled, his legs splay out a bit. It's a good thing to be flexible, but is it something that is notable for you as a quarterback, or is it something that is just, that's how his body works?
Yeah, this is why I like never slid in my career. I always thought it was sort of like, you know, and I, you know, probably my most famous play is the Rosencopter, of which I probably should have slid.
I saw it
but
live.
When you slide, you are like exposing yourself to an entire defense that's trying to kill you. And the later you slide, the harder it is for them to sort of let up, and you're completely exposing yourself to uncomfortable shots, or as you're saying, your ankle might be underneath you, or your knee might be underneath you. I feel like quarterbacks get hurt sliding as much as they do actually diving forward and get all they can, or just diving down early. Or if you're going to slide, you have to slide early. You just do. You can't sort of wait until the last second. So if you're ever unsure, you know, we all grew up playing football in the backyard. I promise none of these kids in the backyards of the greater Chicagoland area are sliding in the backyard. They're diving forward for the pylon or for the first down or for every yard possible. And I think that's the natural instinct of a quarterback. And if you're ever unsure, I think it's always best to basically go head and shoulder pads first and protect that football. And I think, you know, and try to keep your head out of it as much as you can. Try to sort of dive into a crevice, I like to say, and get down. But I always am concerned about the way guys slide and exposing yourself to a defense, in particular if you slide too late.
I wanted to ask your perspective on something I heard on my drive-in this morning. Dave Wannstedt, in his regular appearance with our morning show of Mully and Haw, was talking about Devontae Adams and that he's almost single-handedly Aaron Rodgers' passing game right now. And they said, how do you scheme to take him away? And Wannstedt's answer sounded a little counterintuitive. But I get his logic, where he said, he talked about being at Pitt and having Darrell Revis. And he said, if there's one guy I got to stop, I'm going to put my best corner on the other guy. He said, I would rather have my lockdown better corner. Just, I know he takes that away, and then I'm going to use numbers and positioning and X's and O's to scheme the other guy away. So that way I feel better about using resources, whether it's bracket coverage or two-man or whatever you got to do, all the safety help and shading and everything else. He said, I could feel better about it if I had my best corner on the other guy. Does that make sense to you?
Oh, absolutely. I actually really like the way Coach Wannstedt, I still call him Coach Wannstedt because he was my coach back in Miami, the way he thinks about that. And we all think about, you know, when you have a great receiver, and this guy, probably the best in the game right now. Do you put your best cornerback on him and try to shut him down? Which we all know, a great receiver, and based off of how the rules are and the passing game and how good quarterbacks are, the offense is just going to have an advantage in all those one-on-one situations, unless you literally have a Darrell Revis or a Deion Sanders, an elite corner. But I would rather put my better corner on, you know, the other guy, Alan Lazard, as an example, my Iowa State guy, who's not a burner. He's a big, strong, sort of does all the blue collar work, but also does a great job with positioning his body. But he generally is not one that's going to catch it and take it 80 yards to the house like Adams does. And then what you can do is, yeah, on the other side where Adams is, you can play your second corner on him, play a safety over the top, whether he's outside and the corner then plays inside, or the safety plays inside and the cornerback plays outside and sort of funnels them to that safety, to the help. And you just sort of have more eyes and sort of physical resources over there. And then, you know, we're going to shut down Alan Lazard with our, you know, our number one corner. And we're going to try to shut this guy down basically by having two guys over on him. I think that's a really good way to go, rather than having your number one corner on Adams and a safety over top. That's a lot of resources. And when the Packers do have guys, and I think Lazard is a good enough player that he would beat that number two corner if he was completely on an island by himself. I think Aaron Rodgers would see that, and he would exploit the weakness, the number two corner of any opposing team.
What do you want to see next out of Justin Fields, just development-wise and just moving forward?
Well, you know, a couple of things. You know, but by the way, one thing I'd like to see out of some of the play con, when they get in those third and two situations or third and one situations, to me, that is when you do the zone reads with your quarterback, with Justin Fields, all right? Not the fullback dive up the middle that goes for zero, or to try to bring in two offensive linemen and basically be in a goal line situation in which the entire team knows you're going to run the ball up the middle. I would rather in those in which they did. So those two plays in the game I thought were bad calls. I would like to see Bill Lazor, you know, call those zone read type plays so the defense at least has to be accountable for this athletic quarterback on third and one, third and two, you know, inside the 10, inside the 5. Those are unique situations where you want to use your quarterback's athletic ability. But what I would like to see is better understanding, one of two things, either better understanding of protections by Justin Fields. You know, I think the first third down of the game, one of the early plays, they threw a swing pass out to the right that would throw into the dirt because Justin got pressure by the Will linebacker blitzing. Well, on that little sort of swing or wide route that they have there, it's really, you know, it's a running back screen. And so there's nobody blocking the Will linebacker. It looked like to me Justin didn't know that because he looked to the left to try to sort of move the defense to the left and then got hit as he threw the ball to the right. Well, if you really understand all the protections of all the different plays you have, you would know, hey, that guy is unblocked, which means I don't have time to catch the ball in shotgun, look to my left, and then come back to the right. I need to retreat here and create separation from that Will linebacker to allow me to get the ball to the running back, right? I would like to see when the free safety is down weak and the protection to new mic it from the mic to the Will. That to me is an advancement and growth in your quarterback's overall knowledge of the game. For all the pass plays coaches like to draw up, it all starts with protection, whether it's play action, whether it's three-step, five-step, seven-step, but it starts with protection. And that is the biggest difference between college and pro football, the complexities of protection. And over the course of his career, and in particular this year, but as we go forward, I'd like to see that advancement with Justin Fields.
Great stuff, Sage. Thank you, sir.
Okay, thanks for having me on.
Thanks, Sage.
That is Sage Rosenfels. Next up, Paul Charchian can make sure that your fantasy team is best equipped for this week. He's got all the trade secrets for you next on Bernstein and Rahimi on The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
Paul Charchian, Fantasy Football Hall of Famer.
That guy must really know what he's doing.
Chief Execution Officer at GuillotineLeagues.com.
He's appointing himself Judge, Jury, and Executioner. He's not Judge, Judy, and Executioner.
He is.
Your guide through the waiver wire.
Hurry, hurry, step right up and keep following the leader.
Charge. With Dan Bernstein and Leila Rahimi on 670 The Score.
Let's talk with Charge here at the bottom of the hour. It's brought to you by DuckDuckGo. He's at Paul Charchian on Twitter. Our fantasy football expert is the chief execution officer at guillotineleagues.com. And as always, you can check him out on Twitch, twitch.tv/Chicago670. The Score. What's up, Charge?
Good to talk. Can I just chime in on Justin Fields? Because I'm sure everybody else already has too. But
sure.
I always feel like I want to get my 2 cents in. Can we get some designed runs? I mean, you know, let's use the natural gifts that he's got. And you know, the things that he should be really special at are deep ball passing, which there wasn't enough of last week, and runs. And I don't understand, with Andy Dalton healthy, why are we running with him and let him break down defenses that way? Now, granted, your defense controlled the whole tempo of that last game, and they didn't need to put Fields in harm's way in any fashion, but still, I just feel like, you know, we're not getting everything that Fields can give this team right now.
I think that that's an excellent place to start. Your job is to get people the most yards and points possible for who they have in their fantasy team. So what you've seen out of Justin Fields previously and then also now, is, especially versus the rest of the league, is what people want to key in on. That is something that is of importance. So I appreciate the, especially the request of the downfield passing. That's something that we've talked about. I don't need the sexiest offensive numbers. I don't need the Lamar Jackson numbers. I mean, well, we do. But when it comes to Fields, I would like to see some more shots.
I would too. And that's, you know, it's part of what we really believe is potentially special with him, and just not enough shots downfield in the last game in particular. And I don't understand all these line of scrimmage throws that they ask him to do. And maybe they're just trying to build confidence with these high percentage passes or something, but darn it, you know, let's take some chances. Let's open up this offense. You've got special receivers in Mooney and Robinson. Let's get them opened up. Let's try some shots. Those guys will have proven they'll catch anything within a reasonable radius. Let's be a little more aggressive.
The absence of David Montgomery opened up maybe more opportunity than we even thought. It's Damian Williams, it's Khalil Herbert, who both ran with purpose. What does this mean from a fantasy perspective? What's the opportunity?
I don't like it from a fantasy standpoint because we thought we were going to get a lot of Williams, and then that would have been a bankable fantasy asset. And Herbert came in, and to your point, I thought he looked good. A little bit different stylistically than what Williams had, but I thought they both looked good. And so let me ask you this. Is this 50-50 timeshare that we got last going to be indicative of what you see going forward? To me, Herbert looked requisite of the job, but that's not necessarily what fantasy people want. Do you think that maintains a relatively even split?
I do, because of how they were featured previous to this in the preseason. I think Williams is still somebody that they want to involve, and we saw that secondarily to Montgomery, so perhaps it's a next man up type of move. But you can't argue with the burst that Herbert had too, and what he ran with. I really liked the style of runs he had.
Yeah, agreed. Williams gives you vision, versatility, a little bit of elusiveness, and Herbert gives you that not up the middle burst, because he's really more dynamic than that, but he does give you a lot more acceleration at the point of the handoff, where Williams is a very patient runner and he doesn't give you the same kind of burst. So I agree. And I think they're going to stick with this 1-2 punch, which from a purely fantasy standpoint makes it hard to know who you would start if either one in most games when they split carry. We'll have to analyze on a week in and week out basis.
There are injuries now across the league. There are some players starting to emerge. Obviously, we got all the craziness that's going on with the Raiders, and I don't know how that's going to affect their distribution of snaps or where the ball is going to go. But obviously, Juju Smith-Schuster is out. Now, what happens now? Who's out there, and who do you like the wide receiver position specifically?
Well, for wide receivers, there's two names. One, if Kadarius Toney is still available, he looks like a special player. I mean, if you're somebody that wants to see any rookie especially hit the field and do something as they belong in the NFL, Kadarius Toney through two games looks amazing. And it's not a fluke. And even when these Giants receivers come back healthy, Toney's absolutely earned all the playing time that he wants here. And for that matter, I don't even know who's going to come back healthy. We know Galladay's out for at least another couple of games, maybe Shepard or something. Care about those guys anymore. Toney is the future of this passing game. He looks fantastic. And then University of Minnesota kid Rashad Bateman expected to make his debut for the Ravens this weekend. Sammy Watkins is now out, and Bateman looks like he's got a clear path to playing time. And like Tony, we're seeing rookie receivers, Jalen Waddle, these a good rookie receivers will make an impact right away. So make sure Rashad Bateman's rostered here. He's got an opportunity to be heavily involved in this offense at really almost right away, beginning this weekend.
How do you see Geno Smith affecting DK Metcalf, Tyler Lockett?
That can't be good. I mean, unless in the, like, since we've seen Geno Smith, he's really turned into somebody who he wasn't back in 2013, 2014. You know, you want your quarterbacks to have, like, three times as many touchdowns to interceptions. At Geno Smith's history, he has twice as many interceptions as he does touchdowns. And even though he looked okay last week, it was a game-losing interception that ended up sealing their fate. And that's always been the concern for Smith. You know, he does have a pretty decent deep ball arm, but it's not. Metcalf and Lockett were enjoying the gorgeous, accurate rainbow bombs from Russell Wilson that really are just trademarked. Smith is nothing like that in terms of accuracy, placement, at least not the guy that we were seeing in the old days with the Jets. So unless he's a materially better, different player, Metcalf and Lockett get to be sketchy starts where we're going to have to look at every matchup and try to really deduce what their prospects are going to be. And if these guys aren't going to get open, we have to think twice about the guys that we normally would start every week, Metcalf and Lockett, not necessarily anymore.
Who else is on the waiver wire that is enticing?
Bunch of running back injuries that you can capitalize on. Devontae Booker will be your Giants starting running back for at least one, maybe two, maybe 3 weeks with Saquon Barkley with that ankle injury. Khalil Herbert's an absolute pickup, who we already mentioned. Daryl Williams is in for Clyde Edwards-Helaire, is expected to miss a couple of games. Jerick McKinnon will get a little bit of run there too. Those are plausible pickups. And then another guy I want to highlight, available in a third of leagues, Elijah Mitchell's your new, is the absolute lock starting running back for San Francisco. And that's always been like a messy timeshare stuff, but they gave Mitchell all of the work last week. Trey Sermon's not even a factor. They're on bye this week, so maybe some people aren't necessarily ready to jump on Mitchell, but he's going to come out of the bye as the lock starter there. And it's somebody that people, is just way off radar. And we know the Niners like to run, so that's another.
When you look at the matchup with the Packers and the numbers that Devontae Adams has been putting up, last segment we talked about the strategy and some of the tactics to stop him. How does he set up against this Bears defense?
Well, so Johnson's been great, right? Jalen Johnson is fantastic. But the problem is he plays one side of the field. One dominant receiver, all I got to do is move him to the right side of the field. And now I get Kendall Vildor all game. And I don't know how you stop that. I mean, that's just the way that this team has decided to go about business at the cornerback position. So you'll probably bracket him, double him on that side, but still, it doesn't matter for Adams all the time. And so that would be, and by the way, and they'll run Adams out of the slot a fair amount, and now he's up against Duke Shelley. That's a plus matchup. So they get so many ways to get Adams open and just avoid Jalen Johnson. And at some point, for my team, and I thought Jalen Johnson could start traveling, that's what I would start doing. He locked on that right side of the field that he plays on, and I see Adams coming up with yet another in a series of gigantic games here.
Great. Charge, thank you.
Thank you, Charge.
Thank you, my friends. Talk to you next week.
Indeed. That is Paul Charchian with good stuff there. I wish he had a little bit more optimistic look at Devontae Adams, but I guess you can't really argue with him.
Charge is a keen NFC North observer and a keen Devontae Adams observer, and unfortunately, I trust him.
Tonight, join Anthony Heron and former Chicago Bear Lance Briggs for the first Miller Lite Top Draft Show of 2021 from 6 to 9 p.m. at Hawthorne's Backyard Bar and Grill in West Chicago. It's brought to you by Miller Lite, proud beer partner of your Chicago Bears. Taste Bears fans can depend on. It's Miller time. When we come back, I love this because thanks to a texter who tipped us off regarding the newest team in the NHL and Les Grobstein's quest to answer the question, what is a Kraken? That's next on The Score.
Okay, cool.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Chicago Sports Station.
He's not their best quarterback. He's a piece of crap.
I am very excited for this because earlier today we got a text, and we love getting good texts because they make us laugh. I mean, let's face it, number one right now is still Todd and Dwight telling everybody that Joe O looks like Herbert Hoover.
which does.
Which blew up our show. But we really do appreciate the fun text. It just adds a lot to the show, and sometimes you get some gold, too. Thank you to the texter who earlier on the show said, Layla and Dan, sorry if you've already heard this, we hadn't. But apparently in the last half hour of the show of Les Grobstein this morning, he talked about a Kraken, and it was pretty entertaining. Mike Rankin has been smiling sneakily the whole time since then. I want to hear what this is.
Another texter from area code 847. Les, what is a Kraken? Not sure about that, but that is the nickname of the new hockey team. It begins play tonight. The Seattle Kraken, they're going to play at Old Key Arena where the Sonics used to play. So how much of a situation that's all going to be? It's a new team in the National Hockey League. Kraken is a United States-based Syro currency exchange and bank, founded in 2011. The exchange provides trading between Cairo currency and fiat currencies. It provides price to give you information to the Bloomberg terminal. That's what they're saying. They're located, by the way, not in Seattle. That bank is located in San Francisco. So much for that. But that is the name of the new team in Seattle, the Kraken.
No. First of all, it's cryptocurrency.
Yeah, poor Les, you know.
That's cryocurrency.
Did he say cryo like frozen?
Kraken is a United States-based Syro currency exchange.
Syro.
What?
Cairo currency.
No, it's a sea monster. The Kraken was a sea monster. It was a I mentioned the book before about the search for the giant squid. The actual scientific history behind the myth of the Kraken comes from what was mistaken when a dying giant squid would be near the surface. The grabbing arms, the grabbing tentacle of the giant squid has a diamond-like paddle on the end. And often when it would flail upward, it could easily be mistaken for, if you didn't know any better, from a distance, it would look like the head of a snake. And that's where the term sea serpent came from. But it was a squid tentacle, and it created these stories of the Kraken, the sea monster, that would come out of the water and grab ships and take them down. And there's various cultures that would have a myth of the Kraken that all came from the giant squid. And that's why their logo is what it is. But no, there may be a cryptocurrency called Kraken, but that's not the genesis of the team.
He's a cephalopoid.
Kraken is a United States-based Syro currency exchange and bank.
I would pay good money to hear Les Grobstein describe Bitcoin.
I don't understand. I mean, I can describe it. I still don't
or
really
like Les
get
talking
it.
About blockchain.
Blockchain technology and Bitcoin mining.
I would put myself to sleep talking about blockchain, but less talking about it would be way, way better. And then to just make it even better, add Grody.
But
just put it all together.
The Kraken gear is cool. Their stuff is really sweet.
Another texter from area code 847. Les, what is a Kraken? Not sure about that, but that-
I
no,
also
definitely not.
I Les is the best, and I just love hearing stuff like that. I didn't know about the Kraken until the rum, obviously.
Really?
Why would I know about a Kraken?
Because what's the movie? Is it Clash of the Titans? Release the Kraken.
I think that was, the rum was before that. I think the rum preceded
that. No. Clash of the Titans, like 1980.
No, the redo, Dan.
I didn't know they redid it.
Didn't they redo it?
Probably.
I don't watch a lot of movies. Can you guys tell? I'm really bad at it. Like, if there's a mob movie, chances are I'll watch it.
Yeah, the first time I ever heard the term was from the original Clash of the Titans.
Is that going to be Justin Fields and Aaron Rodgers on Sunday at Soldier Field? It's Packer week. When do we like flip that calendar?
Yeah, I guess they did redo it. Apparently, was it Liam Neeson that actually got to say it in the redo? I think it was.
What year was that?
It was Laurence Olivier who originally did it.
Okay, cool. But
what year was the Liam Neeson one?
2010?
Yeah, that came out at about the same time as the Kraken rum. Yes.
Kraken is a United States-based Syro currency exchange.
It's so good.
I thought Kraken rum was way more recent than that. I don't know. I remember it from 1981, and it was Laurence Olivier, who I believe is Olivier, who said, "Release the Kraken."
Yes, that was also a slogan based on the rum.
So much for that.
That's how I feel. And did you see Brandon Fryer once again? Just the best Sox gear on in the building. I loved the South Side shirt that he had on, but now he's just got the hoodie jersey combo, and it's flashy. I like it. I have to.
He's appropriately dressed for the blackout today, round two. Is that what's happening? Are they doing it again?
That's a good question. You know, I just assumed like I was gonna go to the game yesterday. I cannot go today, unfortunately. And I was gonna wear black. I was gonna wear that cool South Side jersey that I got. Brandon Fryer looks sharp.
Yeah, Kraken Black Spiced Rum was introduced in 2010.
See?
So around the same time as the remake, but it's still not 1981 when we first heard the line.
The Kraken.
Is this my first Packer week? A texter asks. Maybe? I want to say the Bears played the Packers when I was working at the Score last year. But it was probably a bad game where we really didn't talk about it.
Transition is next with Lawrence Holmes on the Score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.